Hey guys, this is Greg, and before we start the podcast, I want to give a quick shout out to a couple of our sponsors. First off, there's CSS, Centralized Showing Service. Everybody knows these guys. They've been around since 1996. CSS has a great solution to provide agents with a quick, courteous, and accurate way to schedule their showings. Kevin Hughes joined the company last year and is making some big moves and some cool hires. Recently, they announced a partnership with CoreLogic that will give agents a way to quickly access scheduling information. They can also book and cancel and reschedule showings online, deliver and receive automated showing notifications by email and text messaging, edit listing information, collect and share feedback, a whole bunch of stuff. This is all integrated with Matrix via their SSO, so big thanks to them, and check them out at showings.com. And I'd also like to thank CoreLogic. CoreLogic is the makers of Organized Real Estate's most used MLS system, Matrix. They recently announced Trestle, which is basically a marketplace for listings. So if you're a broker, Trestle helps you manage listings better, your listings better. If you're a technology provider, you can use Trestle to aggregate listings for your app so you don't have that expense anymore. If you're an MLS, Trestle helps you manage all your data relationships. Recently, they announced Trestle achieved RISO Platinum certification, so that's fantastic. Check out the show notes for links to both these products. Also, if our listeners are interested in sponsoring the Industry Relations Podcast, please drop me a line at gregroberson@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And now, on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Industry Relations with Rob and Greg. This is your co-host, Rob Hahn, and the other co-host, Greg Robertson, is on the line.
Buongiorno, Rob.
Buongiorno, Gregorio.
We got those intros right this time. That's great.
I know. Like, not quite professional or not even quite amateur. I don't know. But we're getting there.
We are not quite professional. That is for sure. I'm sure a lot of people would agree with this.
Lots has happened. So we're going to just, you know, talk about issues and just try these things out. Clearly, we do need to talk about, you know, one of the biggest things that happened. Like, I think it happened literally while you're on your flight to Italy.
Yes, exactly.
They are finally picked a new CEO to take over for Dale Stinton. And I must congratulate you, my friend, because, you know, we've done like one or two episodes on this, and you've always, you know, been very pro Bob Goldberg. And I didn't know the man, but I was very pro like female CEO and all that. Clearly, you are right. I don't know if you had any inside scoop on that deal or not. Since you know the man, like tell us a little bit about the new NAR CEO, Bob Goldberg.
Well, I mean, I know Bob, you know, I've worked with him before. I mean, I'll give you a little context there that when I was at eNeighborhoods, we were I think they started off by calling it a realtor VIP, and now it's called the member benefits program. But we were kind of one of those partners that a lot of people talk about that Bob had set up with either industry companies or outside, in you know, like FedEx was a partner and Liberty Mutual is a partner, and it's a very successful program. So one of the kind of benefits of that is you get to, you know, interface. I'm just really not talking about Bob, but I mean, you know, the staff at NAR. And I got to know a lot of people at NAR corporate. And you would go to events together. You'd be invited to different events, you know, retreats and things like that. So you kind of break bread, have a few dinners and drinks with everybody. So you kind of just get a feeling of people. I just thought that from a high level standpoint, I just thought that bringing somebody from the outside was always just a bad idea, because I think you need somebody that knows the kind of inner workings of things. That's number one. Number two, I never really believed that he would be more of the same. I've worked for CEOs. I've been the man behind the man. I've been some other places. And as much as I support that person who I'm working for, it's not that everything that they're doing, I would do the same way. Right. Sometimes I would do an exact opposite way, but you want to support, you know, who you're working with. I think loyalty is a good thing in that respect. So I never put that aside. And then, you know, really the strongest thing is that you get a sense of a leader, of a person, by the people that they work for or that work for them, that work with him, right? So I always just got the greatest vibe from people in that division that he was in charge of who were working for him, that this was a quality person. This is a person that they enjoyed working there, that they and believed in what they were doing, which is huge, right? I mean, to get people to believe what they're doing is a good thing. So I just, overall, I just thought, you can't let this asset go to waste here or be jumped over or inserted by the flavor of, well, it's got to be, you know, a certain gender, a certain race, a certain whatever, right? From a certain industry or whatever. This is a quality person. This is somebody's, most of their adult life has been in this. I mean, I think Bob started with PRC, which is a whole other kind of funny MLS thing. So yeah, it's all those types of things that I thought, just like, how could it be anybody else? I just could imagine there would be somebody that they could find that really brings that all together, right? Yeah, so I don't know if that's a little bit rambling there, but
that's a little bit
of my thought process.
I mean, so one of the things that I find a little bit unfortunate is, you know, I really hammered NAR on this. I feel like the only negative is people thought that I was hammering on Bob, right? That's not the case at all. Like I said, I don't really know the man, but everyone that does know him say he's wonderful. You know, they say he's smart, he's capable, you know, exactly like you said, you know, he's got people, like good people in his department. You know, he's not a jerk, he's not an asshole, right? He's like a really good guy, you know, really competent, really super nice guy. And I'm like, great. You know, I think that's all true. The piece that I just question, though, because exactly like what you said, like who else could it be, right? Like to you, Bob's the obvious choice. Like who else could it be? Well, if that's the case, then why don't we could just go through this, like, you know, song and dance that, by the way, cost the NAR members how many millions of dollars, right? Because Heidrick & Struggles typically charges 1 year of a CEO salary as a fee. Well, this position is over $1 million a year.
Yeah, but Rob, you're like making this assumption that it was already a done deal. I don't think, you know, you're the very cynical about that. I don't necessarily at all think that it was a done deal. No, not at all. I think he was sweating. I think there are people who were in that race for that thing that honestly had a shot. I don't think the premise that you thought that this was just a done deal, I don't agree with.
I'm not saying the premise is that it was a done deal, right? Is one of two things. Either it was a done deal and the fix is in, or the NAR leadership is just completely confused. Think about what you just said.
Hold on. Again, those are the two things. They're either the fix was in or they're clueless. What's so clueless about hiring a world-renowned recruiting company to help you find people? That's clueless?
No. What's clueless? Let me finish the thought. What's clueless is that they didn't just name him Dale's successor 2 years ago. That's the clueless part. You see what I'm saying? In other words, you're exactly right. If we're going to look at this, it has to be somebody who really understands the organization. It can't be somebody from outside, you know, outside the industry who doesn't know how real estate works. But it wasn't just real estate. It was NAR, right? It has to be somebody who, you know, has run a national organization, who understands NAR, understands all these things. And the leadership team in their announcement came out and said, look, his 22 years of tenure at NAR was what gave him the leg up, you know? And I'm going, okay, if that's the case, there is nobody else, right, in the entire world that could measure up to Bob. Like, who else has that type of tenure? Who else has that type of...
But again, you look at that as like...
a successor? That's my point.
You look at that as like a bad thing, like, oh, they shouldn't have hired these people. You never know, though, right? I think it's kind of smart because there's always an X factor. Maybe that some guy's going to come in. To me, you're saying it's like, oh, they should close the patent office because everything else has been invented so far, right? We've already invented everything, right? So why do this when we have this one person that, hold on, now let me finish, right? So what is so wrong about like covering your bases? Like, you know, like being thorough, maybe you could call it being thorough instead of being clueless, right? Where, you know what, we think this is the guy, but let's just go out there. Maybe there's going to be some X factor out there that we're going to find, that some guy that's so fresh and so innovative that it's going to give us a different perspective that we really never thought about, right? And let's be thorough about this process and see what happens. Could you call it thorough instead of clueless?
I don't think I can, because again, you're talking about patent office. That's not the right analogy. Fact is, there are companies every day that name successors and they have succession plans, right? They don't go through a Heidrick & Struggles, you know, nonsense. They just go, this is a guy within the company who is clearly best suited to lead this company forward. We know him. He knows the company. He's capable or she's capable, what have you. And this is a successor. And quite frankly, it isn't as if NAR didn't know this was coming. it isn't as if NIR was like caught, you know, by surprise. And I feel like it'd be one thing if they really were like, well, you know, we really don't know, right? We really don't have anybody that stands out as somebody that could, you know, be the successor. So let's go on the search. And of course, you know, we'll consider internal candidates as well. And at the end of it, it turns out that long tenure NAR and a long record of success, like that was what was going to be positive. If not, then just name the guy the successor. Right? They knew like 3 years ago that Dale wasn't going to renew this. They knew this. So why not just get together and go, okay, why not just name Bob the successor? And here's
I can't believe you don't know the answer to that question of why they didn't just name it. I can't believe you don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Because the membership, I mean, this whole thing about who should be the new CEO, should it be a woman, should it be this or that, this has been brewing for 3 years, for 4 years. They've been talking about this forever. This is a political organization, right? They couldn't do that because the membership was already squawking. If they just went down and said, nope, he's the man, right? That would then kind of give everybody their proof that this is a draconian, you know, company and blah, 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 right? That's why they couldn't do that.
What do you mean by draconian company?
Well, that they just say, no, we're not listening to anybody. And we're just naming this guy.
All right, if you say so.
I mean they've been talking about this. This hasn't been a topic just this year. This has been fodder for a long time.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And I've always said from the beginning, look, if it's going to be Bob, then just name him successor. Because it's not like they don't know the guy. Like, what do they need to interview Bob for? Do you know what I'm saying? They've worked with him for 22 years. It's not like he's some unknown.
The process wasn't about interviewing Bob. It was, again, seeing if there was some sort of X factor out there.
Oh, dude. I mean, it's very clear that Bob even said, like, he got interviewed, right? And all these, like, you know, new novel ideas and whatnot. I'm like, why do you need this? Like, this is somebody that you actually know.
Well, again, I'll go back to what I said before. Sometimes when you're supporting another individual, you know, Bob is supporting his CEO. You know, when you have like reviews with your employees,
right?
When you're being interviewed, those are times that is kind of acceptable where you can be you, where you can have these straight upfront conversations with your manager, right? With the people that employ you. Whereas before, if you were just like these naysayers all the time while business is conducting, they're going to look at you as like not supporting what's going on, right? You know, you always support the family in front of other people, right? But these kind of interviews let you kind of branch out to things that you might not have said before because they might not have been popular with the leadership that you're supporting at that time. That's a perfectly reasonable explanation for listening to what he says and some of the ideas, or anybody, not just him, but in any situation.
But hold on a second, Greg. Think about what you're implying. What you're implying is that in the interview process, Bob, you know, came out of the shadow and started espousing ideas that essentially Dale would not have gone for. And so in order to support Dale, you know, as the boss, right, Bob just kind of kept quiet and kept these ideas to himself because they were
not saying that at all. He may have expressed those ideas to Dale. Dale's like, well, you know what? Thank you, Bob, for that information. I want to go this route, right? And that information may not have gone to the search committee people, right? So what's wrong with that?
No, nothing's wrong with that. But what I'm saying is what you're concluding, what you're strongly implying is that Bob's going to represent, like his new stuff, whatever they are going to be a sharp departure and essentially a contradiction to what Dale's regime and what Dale's ideas were. In other words, if they're complementary, there would be no problem, right? Like, you know, you've got people working for you. You're the CEO of your company, right? If one of your underlings came to you and said, hey, you know, boss, I think we should try this, you know, new feature, new product or whatever. And you look at it and go, wow, that's awesome. It's going to make Cloud CMA more valuable. Like, what is their contradiction, right? I mean, he's supporting you, right? That's not a show of disloyalty. It would only
there could be several ideas, right? Some, mm-hmm. I have employees now that think our pricing is crazy, right? But, you know, I'm more comfortable doing the pricing structure that we have.
Right.
And I have more experience doing it that way. And trying this brand new idea that I can see some benefits to, but I just can't risk the company on.
No, I understand.
Because I'm not comfortable. It doesn't mean that I don't think it's a good idea. It's just, you know.
It's not what you want. Right. No, I get it.
It's not what I want, right? I mean, but I don't look at that as like, but at the same time, if I left and that employee, I don't think there's anything wrong with that person saying when the new regime came in and said, well, what do you think? Well, you know, I've been talking to Greg about doing this and that, but There's nothing wrong with that.
I didn't say there's anything wrong with that. What I'm saying is the clear implication is that they now get to do what you rejected. Because sure. If you supported, then they would have done those things, right? It wouldn't have been seen as being disloyal or not supportive. You see what I'm saying? Like, in other words, for this, your entire premise was, look, I mean, when you're working for somebody and you've got a boss, then you got to be the right good soldier and not, undercut CEO. I get that. I totally get it. But if you're working with that guy and you suggest an idea and it's in harmony with, so it's not against what the boss is saying. The boss is looking at it, that's awesome. Let's do that. So,
but again, those guys, the committee might not have heard those ideas either.
Right. Like those things that basically that Dale squashed or Dale wouldn't have supported. Bob has had a bunch of those ideas. So in other words, what we can expect and should expect is that Bob's going to do a bunch of these things, whatever they are, that Dale was not a fan of, right?
Again, I'm speculating. I have no inside information on what he said or didn't say.
I know.
But I'm just saying the premise of having a process where you interview a person, right? And you're saying, oh, you already know what he's like. Well, you don't. You don't know everything, right? And giving that person a chance to have an audience with the people that are selecting things is a good thing. It's not like something like, oh, why they even bother? I think it's a valid process.
Oh, God. All right. I mean, you and I would just differ because I feel like you could have just easily done that 2 years ago. Say, you know what, Bob? We think you should be the successor. Dale's not in the room. If you were the successor, if we name you a successor, what would you do different? In other words, the committee could have just as easily interviewed Bob 2 years ago. Under confidence, say, what are you thinking? Here's what we're, whatever. And say, okay, we're comfortable with this guy. We know him. We know this is what we're going to want.
But I think the industry and their membership made that impossible. I think if those guys just said, we're going to tap this guy on the shoulder and make him CEO, they would have got more of an uproar than what they had now, right? Which is a pretty big uproar.
I don't know, man. Like, who, you say the membership, but like, who?
There's freaking Facebook groups about this. Right now, man.
No, here's the thing. Look, I happen to know the creator of that Facebook group. That Facebook group came about and I started talking about it only because they actually didn't name a successor. In other words, when they made and opened up the process and said, you know what, we're going to do a full-on nationwide search, that's when that group came about. And that's when it said, okay, well, if you don't have a candidate.
And if they just named a successor, I guarantee you there'd be Facebook groups or sub saying,
I don't think
this
so.
This is why are they shoving this person down our throat? We should have considered this person and that person and that person. I mean, it's just.
I don't think so, man, because fact of the matter is, this whole process that was shrouded in secrecy and decisions made behind the scenes, there are a bunch of people who are pretty goddamn pissed off right now. And you don't see Facebook groups popping up because that's not the NAR way. It's Omerta. Keep your mouth shut and,
Listen to you.
No, it's true. Like, I actually happen to know it's true, right? So, if they had just gone 2 years ago and named him a successor, say he's the best possible candidate, there's no point in wasting members' money. Let's just not do this. Yeah, people might have grumbled in private, but that there would have been no backlash. There would have been no, especially when Bob is, as everyone says he is, just a great guy and a capable leader. Like, everyone would be like, that's fine. Of course it is. I mean, who else would it be? And we all thought of Bob as the number two guy at NAR for the last 5 years anyway. So that's my thing. Here's the issue though, right? Because we're not going to spend the entire
time. There's some points that you make good points. I just think the thing we're going to agree to disagree on is the fact of whether or not there would have been uproar if they just named his successor. I think it would have been more than what we have now. That's our disagreement.
I think there would have been no uproar. I don't think so.
Really doubled down on that.
Like I said, man, like Fortune 500 companies, major companies all the time name successors, all the time. In fact, it's best practice to have a succession plan. And what's remarkable about this industry is we have these major companies with no obvious succession plan. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like,
look. This is a member-driven organization. They always say that. And I think, people talk about that. It's not a corporation. This is a membership-driven organization, right? So fine. I think that's in their very DNA.
Greg, if 3 years ago, okay, when they knew that there was a good chance Dale's not going to renew his contract, if 3 years ago they formed the committee, they talked to Bob and they said, we want to name Bob a successor, and now we're going to, at NAR Annual, do an event where the membership could do a Q&A with Bob or, approve the choice, like, there would have been no problem. right? Then the membership has the opportunity to go, well, you know, why is he the right guy? And, you know, voice their opinion and whatever. And then that would be the end of it. Like,
well, okay. We're going to agree to disagree. Okay.
So the process is one thing. And incidentally, as a small aside, I'm still waiting for a response from Bill Brown.
Yeah. Okay, so Bill Brown, this is one of the guys you're saying is part of this, or Marta, or however you pronounce it, right? Or
Marta. No, thankfully, he wasn't. Like, thankfully, I do appreciate.
No. Hold on. Everybody is, though. Rob, according to you, it's all closed doors and everything else. But this guy isn't. But he's the outlier here.
I love the fact that he broke rank. I've never had this happen, like where, you know, an important association leader came on and just, you know, sort of responded. You know what I'm saying? At least like called me out and said, you're an idiot, right?
I think that the company that NAR is using for media training has just added a section on bloggers right now because of you. You know, maybe, they can rock, you know, a print journalist, they can rock in front of a camera, but they haven't learned how to rock with a blogger. So that's going to be added to the media training handbook immediately.
Well, if that's the case, then that's an unfortunate step backwards, because if you really are a member-driven organization, then the number one thing that the leadership owes its members is transparency. And the leadership at NAR have long had a real tough time like communicating, here's why we're doing what we're doing. So I think what Bill Brown did was actually really good, and I think it's excellent. My point is, I'm waiting for a response. You can't engage and then like wall of silence, you know, so we'll see. You know, and maybe it's not Bill, maybe it's Elizabeth, maybe it's John, but you know, at some point, they don't have to do it on my block. Fine, do it on your own, you know, but they have to be a little bit more transparent and be a little bit more communicative about what their thinking is, what their vision is, all of those things. But having said all of that, there is still this massive question, and you're sort of hinting to it, which is there going to be change? Everybody said Bob's a change agent, right? You know, the fact that he was supportive of the previous regime as a good soldier for 22 years, you know, we're not supposed to read into that to say that it's going to be more the same. It will be different.
Regime. Here's the regime.
Thing. What's going to be
the family. The regime. Like,
since you're a fan, let me just ask you, because I've already staked out, like, here's what I would look at. Things would be different. What will you look at to say that the Goldberg administration will be different? Like, what will you be looking for?
Yeah, there has definitely been a vibe that comes out of NAR corporate.
Right.
That has seemed to be, if you want to call it, on the passive side being defensive, right? And on the other side of the coin could be just hostile, right? And the weird thing is that I don't know if you read that post that Dale wrote, and I think he was actually talking about our blog, our podcast, talking about Upstream.
Okay,
and he mentioned that he'd listened to a few podcasts, and I can't think of any other podcasts but ours. It's got to be ours, right?
And hey, thanks for listening, Dale. Hi.
No, I'm surprised, you know, somebody like that would listen. But I mean, it did sound, he actually listened to what that is like, you know, and saw those as kind of some of the things we were talking about as valid criticism. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when he calls things like a cartel and he tried to qualify that statement, I think walk back from that statement. A lot of these things that have been coming from there has been very, very, to me, hostile. And like I said, maybe just defensive, right?
Right.
So if there's a certain tone that changes there, I think that's going to be a good thing for everybody. I just know Bob, he's kind of one of those guys, and I've experienced this personally, where if he sees two things that are kind of like in war with each other or having problems, he can be sometimes that peacemaker. I've seen him do it. So I think that there's a chance for that to happen. And I think there's a lot of fiefdoms that have been developing in this industry, whether it's, you know, NAR's own divisions like, you know, RPR and AMP and the MLS industry and the vendor industry, right? And brokers. I think having Bob in the center of that thing is going to be a good thing because I think he has those kind of skills.
So basically, it's you'll be looking for a change in tone, hoping for a kindler, gentler NAR.
I think somebody that can be open to listening to all sides of the conversation and help bring people together, different groups together. I think he's very good at that.
Okay. So it'd be more of a unifier than, I don't know.
Yeah, this hard line of, I'm, you know, the realtor blue, you know, and this is it, right? I mean, I think he's going to be more of like realizing there's different players that are all in this sphere we call organized real estate. And I think NAR can help facilitate those relationships and everybody working together instead of just taking such a hard line sometimes.
That doesn't feel like a lot of change to me.
Think about where we are now, dude. I mean, with every group out there just pissed off at one another, if we could all kind of take that away, I think that's a huge change.
But every group is pissed off at one another because for like actual reasons. It's not because of tone. MLS is pissed off at NAR because of upstream and RPR, right? And because NAR is constantly trying to create a national MLS and put the MLSs out of business. Like, is that going to change? Like, is the actual policy going to change?
Well, they are changing, right? I mean, now it's not just upstream anymore. It's MLS input, right? They announced that. And then the first thing that Dale says is it was these MLSs are a cartel, right? So, I mean, you know, it's like positive change starts to happen. And then NAR up there starts throwing those things out.
Right.
I think it does matter.
I guess then, you know, the difference is, yeah, tone's important, no doubt. But I don't think that we have the conflicts in the industry we do because of tone alone. I think it's because of actual policies and actual things that are being done, right? Or that were being done, you know, alienating a whole lot of people and piss them off, not because of their tone, but because of the actual policy. In other words, like, you could be Bob and say it in the sweetest possible voice, but it's like, hey, listen, guys, you know, really, you're not a cartel and, you know, really want everyone to get along, but we really need your local MLS to go out of business. I think that's going to cause a lot of conflict no matter what tone you put it in. So the question is, like, what is the actual change in policy, in my opinion? And I've said, look, I'm going to be looking for, is Bob going to make any changes in personnel? Because personnel is policy. And you can't tell me that you keep the same bureaucracy that NAR's had for the last 30 years. Nobody changes. Everybody stays the same except Bob becomes a CEO. And then we're going to see this whole new like change agent, like everything's going to be different. I just don't buy it. So I'll be looking to see if he actually makes some changes. And Bill Brown got like real hot with me over that one. He's like, well, these people are professionals. Like, of course they are. Of course they're great. But none of this say these guys are bad. This is say a new leader comes in, they usually bring their own people with them, right? And that's my take on it. Like, am I crazy for thinking that? Is Bob going to put his own people in place?
Well, I think people that he's familiar with, I mean, I don't think the bureaucracy comes from staff. I think the bureaucracy comes from, you mentioned this before, like how many directors they have and things like that. I mean, the staff thing to me is minimal. I mean, should people that have supported Bob for years and years and been part of his organization now be brought up when he's brought up? Of course. Absolutely. You're gonna surround yourself with people that you know and you trust and know that can get the job done. But from the bureaucracy standpoint, I think that's all on the association side, right? Of eliminating this number of board seats or, you know, all these temperate things. Those are going to take time to make happen. But, you know, I think the skills that Bob can display is being a person that can listen. And again, I don't know Dale that well, but I just know that Bob has a certain skill set that he can get people to talk to each other. And maybe by getting more people to talk to each other, you can begin to break those things down.
Okay. I hope so, because he's got a major challenge ahead of him. Because the number one thing that has to change at NAR going forward is, you know, they've got to do something about, I guess we'll call it the realtor brand, right? They have to do something about the A1 problem in the danger report. You know, and you've sort of touched on this during our Redfin episode, the fact that there are just too many goddamn incompetent agents out there. Most of those incompetent, unethical agents running around are actual dues-paying NAR members.
Okay, like, yeah.
We've got to do something about that.
Right? Yeah. So here, this is great because this is another thing that about you that drives me fucking crazy. All right. And it's just that, how do I put this? I get it. I get it. There's a problem in the industry with like incompetent agents, right? The danger report, all that kind of stuff. Where I draw the line where it sounds like what you're doing is you're blaming NAR.
I am.
Right? You're saying these, okay. So let me ask you a question. All yes. Right. Who hired them?
Who hired who?
The agents.
I don't know. I guess you're supposed to say brokers.
I'm not supposed to say.
Okay.
Brokers did, right? Oh. A broker interviewed this person, thought they would be a great part of their team, and they brought them in. Did NAR have any say in that?
No.
Okay, so why the fuck are you blaming NAR, right?
Right.
When they had no control of the hiring process, right? It's like, I mean, if somebody's going to get a blame, they have to have control how to fix it, okay. Right? So to me, the brokers are the ones that should deserve a fair amount of this blame rather than the organization that they then somehow join later on. I think the amount of attention or the amount of kind of blame that you assign this, you know, political organization, this, you know, membership organization of NAR as to what the problem is really just misplaced here, right?
Mm-hmm. So then
we should get the brokers that have to be on the same page here, right? Because all they're doing is they're doing a math equation in their head. Well, I can bring this person in no matter how competent or whatever, and I can make some money off them for a while. And that's their motivation. But down the road, now you're saying, well, you know, NAR's got a problem because of these agents. How do we motivate the brokers to bring better agents into the fold?
So let me explain why I blame NAR for this. Okay. Number one, I think
you're a valid point or not a valid point?
No, not a valid point. And here's why. Because brokers don't hire agents. Okay.
NAR does. NAR hires the agents.
No. Well, there's only one broker that hires agents, and that broker is Redfin. Because to hire somebody means you pay them a salary. It means that you pay them. What brokers do today is not hiring. What brokers do today is sales. They don't pay their agents. The agents pay them, right? And that's the reason.
So an agent can just get a business card, call them Century 21 Pacific, and start selling real estate, right? That's what you're describing to me right now.
When there's a sale and there's a commission check, who pays who? The agent pays the broker.
Okay, but first the broker must have that person, must in some and have a relationship. In fact, it's legal. The agent has to kind of assign their license to a brokerage. Yeah. That broker has to say, yes, you're competent enough to work with my organization, right? So the broker is making that call.
The brokers out there, like, come on, like you're making it sound like there aren't brokerages. In fact, there's a public company, right? RE/MAX does public filings that they talk about. Agent count is the most important thing we have because these agents pay us a desk fee and, you know, monthly fees and this fee and that fee. That's the basis of the revenue. It's not we hired these agents to go do, you know, a bunch of work for us and that's not how they view things. So because brokers do not hire agents because to hire somebody and you know this is a business owner, you have to have costs that go into it. And they then need to go out and generate.
Oh, agent recruiting isn't a thing. It doesn't cost things to.
It's sales. It's not hiring. It is sales. Okay. That's point number one. But the bigger point, the point number two is this. This comes out all the time in the whole raise the bar conversation, right? And everyone say, well, NAR, you know, should do this, that, or the other thing. And typically what they say is it's too easy to get a license. And I say, of course, it's too easy to get a license. But you don't control that. As brokers don't control it, NAR doesn't control it. Government controls licensing, right? We can agree on that?
Because you have a license doesn't mean that you're going to get affiliated with a broker and start selling real estate. A broker can control that.
You know, when it's sales, it's probably going to happen that way, right? Here's the thing. My point is this, and the reason why I blame NAR for and say that they need to change, and Bob's greatest challenge going forward is going to be tackling this, is just because you have a license does not mean that you should be a realtor. Do you know what I mean? What I'm trying to get at is, fine, you don't control state licensing. Somebody could go out and take a test and get a license. That does not mean that they then deserve to carry the realtor brand. That does not mean they deserve to join your trade organization, a voluntary association, just because they have a license. Okay? That is where I blame NAR. In other words, if only about 15 to 20% of real estate licensees in this country were realtors, that brand would mean something. And only those who sort of live up to whatever the organization itself believes you need to live up to, only those guys can have it. Instead, what we have over the last 50, 60, 70 years is, oh, you have a license? You want access to the MLS? You better become a realtor. I'm like, what the hell? That's the piece I have a problem with. So you're saying it's the broker's fault. I'm like, I don't even blame them because for brokers—
Their hands are clean in this entire narrative that you're kind of creating here?
It's not that their hands are clean. What I find remarkable is not that there are brokers who actually live up to some sort of code that they have that they don't actually need to, right? You know, if you look at the actual business dynamics, what a broker should do is go out and recruit anybody that can fog a mirror, right? Because they're not paying them anything. It's not costing them anything. A lot of times these, you know, incompetent agents are paying them a fee, a desk fee or a tech fee or whatever fee. So it's sales. So from a business logic standpoint, what's amazing to me is that there are brokers who actually go out and say, you know what? I don't want you working at my company because you don't live up to my standard, what I consider to be ethical behavior, what I consider to be competent behavior in representing a family in their most important purchase. I look at those brokers and I want to praise them. I say, good for you. Like, that's the way it needs to be. That's leadership, because you're leaving money on the table by doing that. But at the same time, am I going to blame somebody for making money in a legal way? No, of course not. Who I do blame, though, is the voluntary trade association that has a code of ethics and has these ideals and principles they're supposed to live up to, and they're out there just trying to get as much headcount as possible. Yeah, I do blame that. I do think that that's a problem, right? But I'm not the only one, right? Realtor members who care look at that and go, that's right. When the realtor brand is meaningless, because 100% of the people in my market has a realtor brand, because in order for them to get the MLS, they have to be realtors. That's not me saying that, dude. That's not some jerk-faced Rob consultant saying that. That's realtor members saying that. So yeah, that is something that actually NAR has control over. And Bob, as the new CEO, had better convince the leadership and the membership, this is what we need to do. What's wrong with that analysis? Just because you have a license doesn't mean you get to be a realtor. And you know, we don't have to go that far afield. Look at commercial real estate. CCIM designation is not carried by every single, quote, commercial agent or commercial broker with a license. You've got to work for that thing, and only like 10% of commercial practitioners have the CCIM designation. Why can't the realtor designation, the realtor brand, be something like that? What is wrong with that?
No, you make some good points, but I would say this still. Maybe it's not 100% the broker's fault, but it's, you're like taking the exact opposite. You're not blaming them at all. No, right? It's just sales to you. I think, yeah. Okay, so maybe it's not 100% the brokers, right? Because there are some policy changes that could be made where you can still have MLS access without being a realtor, right? And some MLSs already have that, right? But
They're forced to.
And giving the brokers a pass, as you are giving them right now, dude, by saying it's just sales, is absolutely, totally wrong. These guys need and are already involved in the process. And there should be some motivation beyond, like, you know, fog in a mirror that helps them and the industry, right? And maybe that's some policy changes there, but it's not an NAR total problem, right? Brokers are complicit in this as well, right? And to say that they are not, I think, is totally wrong.
Well, here's why I say they're not, okay? Because when somebody starts a brokerage, why do they start a brokerage? Is it not to make money?
Oh, so anytime you want to make money, everything's fine.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if your purpose as an organization is to make money, then you need to go make money in a legal way. NAR was not founded to make money. NAR was founded and started in order to raise the level of professionalism in the industry and to advocate for property rights. That's why that was founded. In other words, NAR is a not-for-profit. NAR is not out there saying we need to maximize our revenues. Brokers are. I find it harder to blame brokers, you know, for doing what they were founded to do, which is to make money. So in other words, like, this is a subtle point maybe. What I'm saying is it's a brokerage's job is to go and make money. So when brokers step up and institute standards and take responsibility for their agents and train them in the right way and follow ethics and follow professionalism, I look at that and I go, you're going above and beyond what your purpose is. Good for you. NAR, on the other hand, was founded for a higher purpose. So therefore, when you don't live up to that purpose, then bad on you. Do you see what I'm saying? So you just want to blame brokers who are going out and doing the headcount strategy and hiring anybody to fog a mirror. I'm like, yeah, that kind of sucks, but, you know, license is controlled by the state and the broker's doing, you know, a legal thing to try and make money. You know, I can't really blame them. In fact, I'd rather praise the brokers who go above and beyond that. In NAR's case, NAR wasn't founded to make a bunch of money and, you know, collect dues revenues. NAR was founded in order to raise professionalism in the industry. So do that. If you're not doing that, then what the hell are you doing? That's the different take on it. And I'm saying NAR can and should do those things. You want to talk about policies? There's a couple of things. Number one, NAR has consistently defended the position that tying MLS access to realtor membership is justified. Now, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but they could just say, you know what? We don't want it tied. You could have the MLS without being a realtor. In fact, that should be the policy. They could have taken that stance, which would have totally changed things, right? The membership numbers would have shrunk, but those members would have been people who really want to be realtors. Number two, NAR has a policy right now, and I posted this on one of my posts to Bob, where association staff are prohibited from taking part in ethics hearings. Why? That makes no sense. Right? Like, you're an association founded on living up to the code of ethics. Why would you prevent association staff, paid staff, from being part of the investigation of ethics complaints? I say get rid of that policy. Those are like two concrete things that could happen that immediately improve things, right? And then finally, if NAR, which is the largest lobby in the country, really wanted to make a difference in terms of brokerage responsibility and all those things, they could do one thing that would be really simple, and it's just remove the 1099 exemption for real estate agents. Make every broker like Redfin. Dude, think about the level of profession we would have like overnight in the industry if that happened. Every broker would fire 70% of the agents that do like no business aren't productive. And they would only keep the best of the best. And then they would actually train them and actually oversee and manage and all that. And you know this, I know this, this is all true, right? And NARS consistently fought against having real estate agents be classified as employees, which, you know, maybe that's good for the business, for the money-making of your broker, you know, members, if you will, or for your agent members. But for an organization that's founded on principles of professionalism and raising the bar, I can't look at that and go, you've done a great job.
Yeah. Again, we're going to agree to disagree.
I was fired up, Greg. Fired up.
to give the brokers a pass and say they are not part of this thing because their motivation to make money and NAR is not, is just ridiculous to me. They have to be part of this conversation. They have to be part of this process to make this industry better. To give them a pass as you're giving them is just criminal, right? I just think assigning every blame to NAR is just, as you are doing, you're saying brokers, nope, they're, you know, that's who they are, right? That's, they're making money. That's what they're supposed to do. It's just, I can't believe that's coming from you. Somebody who cares about this industry and just giving this entire, the people that are involved in the top of the fucking very funnel and just giving them a pass and lay all the problems on down, way down in the funnel. I can't believe you believe that, man. You've got to walk back from that a little bit and say, yes, brokers have some responsibility for Christ's sake.
See, the problem is that you're saying brokers have some responsibility. I don't think so. What I would say is realtor brokers have responsibility. Okay. In other words, if you are a broker and you believe in the ideals of NAR and you believe in the realtor movement.
How many brokers are realtor members in the country right now? Would you say like it's over 90%?
Well, it's like way over 99.9%. But
okay, so we're talking about brokers then, man. Why are you splitting hairs then? It's all brokers then.
Because the membership is not voluntary. These brokers don't have a choice. If they want the MLS, they have to become realtors, right? Those aren't members. They're hostages. I mean, that's the line I use. It's true. I'm saying association membership today is not voluntary. So you can't assign that, you know, sort of expectation on a broker or on a member. I'm saying in a world where it is voluntary and a broker says, I believe in these ideals, so I'm going to become a member, then I could say, you know what, you, Mr. Broker, you have voluntarily joined this organization. You have voluntarily said you subscribe to these ideals. Now I do expect you, realtor broker, to do a better job of hiring and managing your people and all of those things. But if you are forced to join, how do I say, well, you know, you got to live up to this thing that you never believed in? Like, how do you do that? How do you blame them for something that they didn't really want to sign up for in the first place?
Again, we're going to agree to disagree.
I get where you're coming from. And believe me, it's a very common, you know, response. And, you know, in the first couple of years as I was sort of struggling with this overall thing, I kind of felt the same thing. Like, you know, brokers need to do a better job of, you know, recruiting, hiring, and training. I guess this is it. I don't put this expectation on a broker. He was just in business to be in business, right? To live up to the higher ideal. I assigned that to organizations that were created for the purpose of the higher ideal. And therefore, I want to praise the brokers who then live up to a higher ideal than they have to. Because let's face it, I mean, most of the brokers in this country are not a bunch of scumbags running around trying to, you know, grab everybody who can fog a mirror. You know what I mean? Most of the brokers in the country are actually trying to do the right thing. And I look at them and go, that's admirable. I'd rather praise you for going above and beyond what is your responsibility to do. And they are, on the other hand, and the reason why I do blame them is because they have managed to make the realtor brand meaningless because everybody has it. And, you know, like if we're going to get right down to it, it's because of dues revenues. And I'm like, that's the brink you need to step away from. And you need to go back and rediscover like why you were created in the first place. It's to differentiate the realtor from the licensee. I mean, that is really why NAR is created, in which case you need to live up to that. I think it's fair to sort of hold NAR to its own standards. And I don't know what's wrong with that. And it's hugely controversial. and Rob, you're a jerk. And I'm like, I don't understand why. I'm saying just go back and reread your own founding documents and the code of ethics, and you tell me if NAR is living up to those right now. And I'm saying, why? You can't control licensing. Government controls that. NAR does control realtor membership, and they do control that. I'm advocating for control that, and everything else will take care of itself.
Rob, we're all in the same boat.
I know.
And the boat's taken in water. And to praise a guy for scooping out water, but being okay with the other guy who's just folding his hands and not doing anything is not a strategy, man. No, we're all in the same boat. We all got to be scooping water out. We can't give anybody a pass. We got to scoop water out.
Actually, the issue is this. We're in a boat, and there are guys who are drilling holes at the bottom of the boat. I say the first step is you throw those guys off the boat, and then we'll see what happens.
But they're just trying to make a buck.
Sure. Make a buck outside my boat. Right? Make a buck all you want. You don't have to be realtors. Go be, whatever, Joe Schmo Realty. Right? And go make all the money you want. You don't have to be realtors. So, I mean, that's maybe a way of thinking about it. So I'm not disagreeing. Like, ultimately, what do we want? What we all want is for the American dream to be protected. Right? We want there to be higher levels of professionalism. We want consumers to be served better. We want all those things. We want to reduce the amount of unethical, incompetent behavior in the real estate industry. And I'm saying NAR can do that and should do that. And it's their mission to do that. That they haven't so far doesn't mean that they won't. And with the change in leadership, I feel like there's like a wonderful opportunity for Bob to sort of step up, to do the sort of let's bring everybody together and listen and figure things out. But, it's like, yeah, that's great. And the tone change will be wonderful. I'm looking for policy changes. I'm looking for actual substantive changes coming out of NAR that actually suggests that we're going to tackle this problem, which is the biggest problem in the industry. It's like the number one thing that's driving everything else. Based on a number of people I've spoken to who do know him, I feel like that could happen. And if it does, awesome. And I'll be his biggest cheerleader. And we'll put this whole like process thing behind us. Who cares about it a year from now, right?
Yeah. And I think, to me, you're waiting for a response. I think the best thing that Bob and his team can do is just let his actions speak, right? So,
implement.
No, right?
Actually, I am waiting for a response because I think maybe build, get clearance from NAR's PR group. But I think that guy's
not coming back in the octagon. No fucking way, dude.
But I'm saying I think it was nice, and maybe fine, work with the PR team. But I do think it was really nice for leadership, NAR leadership, to communicate openly. Right? Be transparent about just, who cares? At the end of the day, I'm a blogger. They're the president of NAR, right? I just happen to disagree with a lot of what he said. But once you've really figured out what it is you want to say, there's nothing wrong with communicating to people through channels outside of whatever tightly controlled and staged like speeches and whatnot are. There's nothing wrong with that. I really do feel like, most of those people, Bill Brown, Elizabeth Mendenhall, John Smaby, Vince Malta, these guys got to the position they are for a reason. I do believe that they have the right things in their heart, and I believe that they're leaders. So speak to us all. Like, what's wrong with that? So yeah, I am expecting a response. I would love to get a response. Maybe not from Bill, maybe from Bob, maybe from Elizabeth as the incoming president, whatever. Somebody say, hey, here's the deal. Here's how we're looking at this. Here's what it is. I don't think that's unreasonable. If you don't want to put it on, Notorious, then put it on NAR, on realtor.org, but put it somewhere so that your 1.2 million, MLS subscribers, 180,000 members can actually see what you're thinking. I don't see anything wrong with it.
Once bitten, twice shy.
Well.
All right, man. Well, I think this is a good point to end. This has been a great conversation.
Indeed.
Just for the record, you're wrong, I'm right. And I think we should end it right there.
Right on, Greg. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks again, everybody.